So, well, when we think of New Year's, what do we think of? We think of resolutions, right? And I'm not going to ask anybody, did you make a resolution? But some of you probably did. I've never been big on making resolutions, and that's mostly because the few times that I've done them, I failed spectacularly, and usually relatively quickly. So maybe some of you guys made New Year's resolutions for 2026. Maybe some of you have already experienced some difficulty, we'll say, with your resolutions. I won't ask. I'm not going to ask for a show of hands or anything like that. It's none of my business. Apparently, there's a day that is designated as Quitter's Day. I've heard about this before, but I looked into it. Apparently, the second Friday of January is Quitter's Day, which is this coming Friday, January 9th, in case you were wondering. Apparently, that is one of the more common days where people decide, okay, look, no, I can't do this. The New Year's resolution isn't happening. It's a day where that optimism that you feel coming into the new year starts to fade. And you realize, okay, maybe I was a little unrealistic in how I'm going about this, or maybe this is more effort than I thought it was. It's not worth it. I can't handle this. Whatever that is, maybe you just set an unrealistic expectation. But apparently, reality sets in for a lot of people on the second Friday of New Year's, which is this Friday. So if you're trying to make it past Quitter's Day, just make it to the weekend. And you'll have that going for you, I guess. 9 days is better than nothing, I suppose. So this morning, I thought we would do something a little different. We're going to look at some of the more common New Year's resolutions that people make and see if there's some sort of biblical parallel or something that we can take from this idea. So I hopped on Google. Most people now, I guess, would use ChatGPT. I still don't do that. Me and Google go way back. And it works really well for me. So I looked up some of the most common New Year's resolutions. And we're going to look at three this morning that were all in the top eight or so of the list that I found. And full disclosure, because I have a reputation to uphold, and that I feel like people... Who laughed? It was Amber, wasn't it? I have a reputation to uphold, and I feel like you people would like get upset with me if I didn't get you out early for lunch. This was going to be four resolutions, but I didn't like the way the last one sounded, and it was the longest one, so I was like, we'll leave that one. I cut that one before Quitter's Day. So we're going to look at three of the most common New Year's resolutions that people go through. And as we look at these ideas and we kind of look at these themes, I hope that we can all find something that can challenge us or encourage us this morning as we try to grow spiritually in the new year. The first one we're going to look at. A lot of people apparently go into the new year thinking, this year, I want to save more money. And a lot of people go, yeah. We could all use a little bit more. This is apparently very common. It's not one that I've ever made. It was number two on the list that I looked at. And I think for a lot of people, it connects to the one that we're going to talk about after this. So people want to save more money in the new year, and there's a lot of reasons for this, obviously. Maybe you think, okay, well, look, this year I spent a lot of money. Or I'm in debt up to my eyeballs because of Christmas. Or because I just went grocery shopping for a normal week, and I can't afford anything anymore. But so maybe your spending's out of control, and things are just a little bit tighter. It's like, I need to do a better job of saving money for a rainy day because who knows what can happen. Or maybe you're trying to save for a new car or a new house. Or maybe you just want to travel more. Or maybe you just like seeing the numbers in one of your bank accounts go up instead of down all the time. I don't know. Or maybe, look, if you're honest, there's a certain lifestyle that you see out there. Like, oh, yeah, if those people can do that, I can do that. I'll just save a little money and I'll get there. Totally by the end of the year, I'll get there. I want that lifestyle. We know that money is one of the most significant sources of worry and conflict in the lives of a lot of people. So what does the Bible have to say about this? Well, the Bible talks quite a bit about money. Paul writes about saving money in a couple of his letters. Jesus talks about money a couple of times in the Gospels. And we all heard the love of money is root of all evil. Everybody knows that. We're going to look at one of these instances that Jesus talked about here. And it's one that you're probably familiar with. This is in Matthew 6, verses 19 to 21. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moths and vermin destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moths and vermin do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Let me get one thing out of the way from the jump. Is Jesus saying here, you should not save any money ever? No. Sorry if that burst your bubble. If you like living by the seat of your pants and just going whatever the wind blows, that's not what Jesus is saying. You can still do that. That's none of my business. But don't do it because Jesus said to, because he didn't. And I'm not telling you that you can just spend recklessly and make poor decisions, whatever. There are multiple places in the Bible that talk about good stewardship and what that looks like. So if that's not what he's saying, then what is he saying? Well, Jesus isn't just talking about money here. He's talking about priorities. What are you doing with your money, with your time, and with your talents? Are you using those in such a way that you continue to build up worth and value here on earth? Or are you using those things and living your life in such a way that it shows that your priority is eternity? You can tell what someone cares about, what they truly find important by what they spend their time on and what they spend their money on. If it's important to you, you make the time and you find the money, right? In general. Everything that we do and every big decision that we make should be eternity focused. Now, does that mean that when I let you out of here in a little while early, that you have to be thinking, where am I going to eat for lunch? What is the biggest difference that this will make eternity, whether I go to McDonald's or Zaxby's? Because you can't go to Chick-fil-A. Unfortunately. I'm not saying that. But every option, every big decision we make, if we're thinking, okay, well, what am I going to do? What am I in this big moment in our lives? Every choice you make, choose the option that points towards eternity with God in heaven. But why? I don't want to do that. Sometimes I want to do something for me. Well, Jesus tells you why. He says the things of this world, they fade. They break. We lose them. They get taken from us. But the eternal reward that we gain through the gift of God's grace and through faithful obedience to Him does not fade. It doesn't break, it can't be destroyed, and it can't be stolen. So this morning, as we go throughout this, as you go through the new year and you're evaluating what you want to do this year and where you are in your life, ask the question, what are my priorities? Where are you assigning value in your life? And ask yourself, what do I treasure? And as we move farther into this new year, let's try to make sure that the things that we find important and the things that we invest in are the things that God finds important. And let's make sure that the lives that we lead all draw both ourselves and others closer to that heavenly reward. So, resolution number one, make sure you know where your treasure is. And it should be in heaven. All right, so what's another one? Another one that was high on the list is people want to be less stressed in the new year. Flipping that calendar page apparently has that effect on some people, or they think it will. They want, this one was lower down on the list, but I thought it was an interesting one anyways. This is one that I think is very closely tied to the one we just talked about. In general, for whatever reason, we are very stressful people. We're very stressed out people. We worry about everything. And by we, I mean this is me as much as anybody else. I worry about everything. I hate that I worry about stuff all the time, and it drives my poor wife slam up the wall. We worry about it. We stress about everything. We stress about money. We stress about work, or we stress about school. We stress about our kids. And then sometimes this really interesting thing happens. We're like, I don't really feel stressed about anything. And then you start thinking about, what have I forgotten that I should be worrying about right now? It's like when you leave on a trip and you have meticulously packed everything, but then you get just far enough down the road where you don't really feel like you should turn around. You're like, I feel like I forgot something. Happens every time. So we do that. We're like, okay, well, I feel pretty good right now. Something's wrong. What am I not aware of that I should be worrying about right now? Based on your reaction, you resemble that remark. I was worried that it was just me that does that, but I feel better already. I think a lot of us can identify with this. When we're always trying to find ways to manage our stress and to figure out what we want to do. And we see plenty of people in the Bible stressed about one thing or another. When we see it a lot in the Old Testament, especially through the book of Judges, we're like, oh, people, Gideon was afraid, and David was stressed out all the time. Some of that was self-inflicted. But lots of people were stressed for one thing or the other in the Bible. Lots of the people that we look to as our biblical heroes dealt with this. And in Philippians chapter 4, I think we see something that speaks to this. This is Philippians 4, starting in verse 4. It says, rejoice in the Lord always. I will say it again, rejoice. Let your gentleness be evident to all. The Lord is near. Do not be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your request to God. And the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. So what does it say here? It says, rejoice always, stress never. Okay, point number two of the sermon today is done. No. We're told to rejoice, which is a very hard thing to do if you're tied up in a ball of stress and anxiety and worry all the time. So how are we supposed to rejoice all the time? Is it really as simple as not stressing? No. Telling people, hey, look, whatever's going on, don't worry about it. That feels like when you're in an argument with your spouse and you say, hey, look, calm down. That's not a good idea. It's not going to work. I have found in my life that it has the opposite effect, actually, of the words that I just said. It's probably not going to work. You're just like, okay, look, I'm not going to be stressed. That's easy. No, it's not that easy. So what do we do? How do we do it? Well, whatever we're stressed about, whatever we're anxious about, we give it to God. We pray. Prayer is a powerful thing. It's our open line of communication to the one that can actually do something about whatever it is that we're worrying about. I have a friend that we met in college. His name is Buddy, which is a funny name for a friend, in my opinion. But we talk several times a day. This was the guy in college that I was in his room or he was in my room most of the time when we weren't in class. We hung out all the time. Now we live farther apart, so we don't see each other often, but we do text each other multiple times a week. And we talk about the stuff that we have going on in our lives. Buddy, we're in a similar stage in life. He's got like a lot more kids than I do, but he's like roughly my age. So his problems are bigger sometimes than mine are. And we talk about the good things and the blessings, like, hey, dude, you'll never believe what my kid did today. Or, hey, dude, my kid's ridiculous. Or, you know, what's going on? But sometimes, because we're negative people nowadays, we spend a decent amount of time talking about the things that are bothering us, the bad stuff, you know, the struggles, the trials. And I remember a conversation that Buddy and I had a few years ago, and I think about it all the time. And I may have even talked about it here before. I'm pretty sure I've talked about it in youth group. I told Buddy that I was struggling with anxiety, which I do. It's like I felt like, you know, my stress level was so consistently high that I felt like I was about to break. Anybody ever been there before? Yeah. I'm sure someone else in here resembles that remark. So I was like, buddy, my stress level has been super high. I've been super anxious. It's like it's affecting all the different parts of my life. So yeah, he asked me just one short, simple question that has stuck in my mind ever since he said it. And he says, have you been praying? And I remember I was sitting on the couch at the house when he sent me this text message, and I just put my phone down. I said, And you kind of look around in the house for one of those like nanny cams, like, how did he know I wasn't praying? Because I wasn't. And I knew pretty quickly, I was like, yeah, you know, I haven't been praying. I've been trying to handle this stuff on my own. And it was making a big difference, a negative one in this case. And I can look back on times in my life where I seem to struggle more with worry or anxiety or fear or whatever. And a lot of those times, I see periods in my life where I wasn't praying like I should. Prayer makes a massive difference in our lives. It is the prescribed solution here in Philippians for the problem of anxiety in our lives. We give God our worry, we give God our anxiety, and what does He give us? Peace. It may not solve your problem. If there's a particular situation that you're going through in your life, it doesn't necessarily make the problem go away. But what He does do is give you the means to deal with it. If we hold tight to Jesus, He will stay near us. And the peace He offers us is bigger than our fear and our anxiety. And all we have to do is come to Him. So resolution number two, if we want to stress less, we need to pray more. So the third one, and the last one, since I cut the other one out, this is the one that was on the top of the list. It's the one that when you think of New Year's resolutions, this is the one I automatically think of. This year, I'm going to lose the weight. A lot of laughter says that might be one that somebody's made in here before. The ones that I failed at in the past, it was this one. It was this one. A lot of people say, you know, yeah, that this year I'm finally going to do it. I'm going to lose the weight. And they make this decision usually sometime early in December. And then proceed to make it dramatically more difficult to do so by the way that they eat through Christmas. Because the goodies are all over the place. You got the fudge and the reindeer chow and all the Christmas crack. All the stuff. It's just tremendously difficult. And people are like, what is he talking about? It's delicious. So a lot of people decide, okay, this year I'm gonna lose the weight. New year, new me. Right? A lot of people say that. I just heard somebody say it like yesterday. People put a lot of stock in the flipping of the calendar page or the scrolling down of the calendar on your phone, I guess. A lot of people want to shed pounds in January and get in shape. There's actually been demonstrated that the amount of gym memberships spike right around the end of the year and then the first of the year, and then the amount of cancellations spike again in like March. And that's not because people make it all the way in March. It's usually because people make it till about Quitter's Day and then they forget to cancel them. Or the gyms make it so incredibly difficult to cancel your membership. It requires a letter to your congressman or something else ridiculous. It's a presidential pardon to let you out of a gym membership. So it's the statistics back that up. A lot of people really care for their New Year's resolution about losing weight. So the question here is, does the Bible talk about this? Does the Bible talk about losing weight? Well, physically, a little, in a couple of spots. Spiritually, it talks about it a lot. Let's look at Matthew chapter 11, verses 28 to 30. It says, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." A lot of us this morning are carrying a lot of weight. Maybe it's the weight of responsibilities to our families. Maybe it's the weight of expectations from your parents. Maybe it's work. Someone in here might be carrying a weight that no one knows about. Maybe this morning you feel the weight of your past and your sin, and you feel like it's crushing you and you don't see a way out. I don't know what weight you might be carrying this morning, but I do know one thing. You might not be able to handle that weight on your own, but you don't have to. Jesus tells us that he can bear the weight. He says that no matter how weary you are from carrying whatever it is you're carrying, he can take it and he can give you rest. We chase a lot of things that make us feel better. The world offers plenty of things that make us forget the weight that we carry for a little while, right? But it never lasts. It's like those fad diets that people try. They try to lose weight and they're like, "Oh, well, I found this new diet online. It's going to change everything." Complete game changer. And they might work for a little while. You might make it past Quitter's Day, but it's not sustainable. But the rest that Jesus offers our souls is sustainable. It comes from a never-ending source of grace and mercy and love. So that battle that you're fighting against your sin and your past, the weight of that you carry, that you think, "Oh, I'm never going to be able to get past this. I'm never going to be able to get over this." That battle's already won. Jesus already won it. That weight that you're carrying in your mind or in your heart, Jesus here today is offering you relief. Come to him, he says, and he will give you rest. Ask the praise band to come up as we prepare for a time of communion. And look, guys, it may be a new year, and that brings a lot of excitement. And for some people, some people look at the new year with excitement, and some people look, "Well, look, this past year was so bad. What fresh horror does 2026 have for me?" It may be a new year, but it's the same God. The same God that redeemed Israel over and over in the Old Testament, and the same God that sent his son Jesus to die for you, is still God today. He still has the power to save you from your brokenness, from the weight of your sin, from your anxiety, and from your fear. And he wants to give you a home eternally with him. God made a resolution thousands of years ago to save mankind that he loved so much. What will you resolve to do today?